Irish Illustrated Insider subscribers. This is Drew Mentak, and I'm here to bring you the fourth episode from our bi-weekly podcast series in the feed, Irish Illustrated Interviews. Today, we're sharing my conversation with Matthias Farley, a former Notre Dame safety and team captain who played for the Fighting Irish from 2011 to 2015. Despite going undrafted in 2016, he built an eight-year NFL career with the Arizona Cardinals, Indianapolis Colts, New York Jets, Tennessee Titans, Las Vegas Raiders, and Carolina Panthers. Before his gridiron dreams came to fruition, he was actually an overly contact-prone prep soccer player at Charlotte Christian School who decided to finally give football a try his junior year. That was partially due to his older brother's encouragement, who even then had often told him he had what it takes to go to the league. We dive into all that, plus his five seasons at Notre Dame, going from a wide receiver as a freshman to starting safety in the 2013 BCS National Championship game, to at times serving as a backup and special teams player over the back half of his Fighting Irish career. The conversation also runs through his time in the NFL, why he carried around a reminder of former Notre Dame defensive coordinator Brian Van Gorder for motivation, and his transition to life after football since he retired from the game in 2023. Of course, we also cover how Matthias remains connected to the current Notre Dame program, why he's so fond of new defensive coordinator Chris Ash, and more. Here's my interview with Matthias. Notre Dame fans, I'm here with Matthias Farley. He played at Notre Dame from 2011 to 2015. He was a captain his final season, and then he had a seven-year NFL career, also a captain in 2020 at the professional level with the New York Jets. Obviously, you had a pretty successful career in football, and it kind of Notre Dame was a big part of that. But as a kid from Charlotte, I'm kind of curious, how did you first get familiar with Notre Dame, and what's your first memory of the university?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on. Super pumped. I was a soccer player my whole life. So I grew up playing soccer. I had an older brother, Nathan, who played football. I always thought it might be cool to play football, but I was pretty locked in on playing soccer early in my high school career. Switched to football my junior year. Was getting heavily recruited at Cincinnati. And then that was the season that BK came over. So all my mail switches started showing up on gold paper instead of black and red paper. And, you know, truthfully, I knew nothing about the history. I mean, I knew Notre Dame was historic and, you know, an iconic football brand, collegiate professional period. Didn't know where South Bend, Indiana was, all of those things. So I went on, I started getting recruited, went up and visited. I got great counsel saying, this is one of those schools you have to go at least visit. Like you could go to Carolina and visit, whatever, some schools you don't, but whether you go or not, you have to visit. So I went up with my high school coach spring of my junior year, wanted to commit right away. He's like, you need to go home and talk to your parents. So I came back, talked to my parents, committed the next morning, and that really started the whole journey, the whole process, and really grew me to who I am and where I am today.
What made you ultimately decide you really wanted to switch from trying to play soccer to football? Had you kind of already, when you switched to football in high school, committed to doing so, or what really kind of sparked doing that?
That's a good question. I realized that soccer was, it wasn't as cool as football. I think a lot of people realize that in high school, right? Our football team was really, really good. They went state my sophomore year, so I'm thinking, you know, we got all these guys coming back. My soccer team was terrible at my high school. I never played club. And we would lose by football margins. So I just thought, you know, it might not be a bad deal to switch and be a part of a winning team. Most of my friends played football. And my older brother, Nathan, who I mentioned previously, he had played at Coastal Carolina, got hurt, couldn't play anymore. So I mentioned it to him my sophomore year, pretty dejected about how soccer was going. And he just lit up. He was all excited. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to do this. And then our high school coach, Eugene Robinson, who I still play golf with every Saturday morning, which is a blast. He's the reason I wore 41. He played 16 years in the NFL, played safety, coached my brother and myself, and he waited. My brother's 7 years older than me, and he waited 7 years for me to come through high school and coach me. And he always told me, he's like, you're going to the league, Farley, you're going to the league. I'm like, dude, I play soccer. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how to fix my chin strap. And so those two were the main components as to why I switched. Amidst all, like, you know, the high school football is cooler than soccer kind of deal.
That's really interesting. I played football 1 year in high school as my sophomore year, and I just got crushed. I did not adapt to it that easily. So I'm kind of curious what it's like for you to pick it up as a junior and then start getting recruited by Cincinnati and the Notre Dame, and I don't know, kind of adapt to the sport you had never really played before.
Yeah, I was a very physical soccer player, so I found myself in, you know, hard trouble all the time. I had to go talk to, you know, my coach and guidance counselor, you know, just, why are you playing so aggressive? So I don't think the physical transition was too bad, because, you know, I was all about running into somebody without pads, basically. So you give me a helmet and pads, and I was very naive in the sense that everybody's fast and big and strong, so I was just crashing out. I just thought I could hit anybody, and the mental side of it was much more challenging. Soccer's obviously, there's set pieces and stuff, but, you know, learning a playbook and terminology, and, you know, I knew cover two is cover two, but, you know, the nuances of the game of football, that was a bigger hurdle to get over than I would say just the physicality of the game.
Interesting. So then you get to Notre Dame in 2011, start out at wide receiver, and then eventually you switch over to safety. But what was that process like to kind of come in at that one position and then eventually make the transition?
Throughout the recruiting process, I was getting recruited as a corner, a safety, a receiver. My whole senior year, I thought I was going to play corner at Notre Dame, which I thought was hilarious because, I mean, y'all have seen me play at this point. There's no way I would ever play collegiate corner. I would get cooked every single play, unless it's a run play, then I come and make a tackle. I'm blanking. Can you repeat the question? I'm so sorry. Went on a tangent. Oh, my freshman year, receiver. Yeah, so I get recruited as I'm back. Recruited kind of all over the place. Show up to campus as a receiver. Theo Riddick was there. Robbie Toma was there. TJ Jones was there. You know, so I'm watching all the, you know, Will Fuller came right after. Thankfully, I was not playing receiver at that point because I'd been even further on the depth chart. And I just realized really quickly that I would never play receiver in college. You know, the high school playbook for offense is very similar. I was in there with Charlie Molnar, and he was just on that whiteboard like Einstein drawing up all this stuff. And I'm sitting there, I'm sure speaking a different language. Even in practice, like warmups, they'd go through, you know, routes on air, and I'd sit there and I would just study what Theo did, what TJ did, and what Robbie did, because I was like, this is the only way I can show that I know what I'm doing. I just have to memorize like each play because everybody runs the same thing. And so I would just memorize it while they were doing it because all the calls, I was still light years behind. So realized in short order, I would never play receiver. Started hitting people in practice and asking to get switched to safety. And going into my freshman spring, my redshirt year, they switched me to safety. And I'm super, super grateful that they did.
Yeah, and that's wild. So you switch positions. Again, this is your, I guess, now you're in your sophomore year, going into your fourth year of playing football, and you end up starting most of the year for a team that went to the national championship. What was that like to kind of, I'm sure that was kind of a whirlwind for you, and there was a lot of, you know, you're playing with Manti Te'o and all these other really prominent players, and you're kind of brand new to the game, just switch positions. Like, what was it like for you to fit into that, like, dominant defense?
I think that we did a great job of developing a culture, you know, within the locker room, and, you know, everybody felt like in the next man up mentality, all that stuff. I kind of came into that year with a chip on my shoulder from getting switched to safety, having a good spring, but I was way too heavy. I was like 220, which is, you know, I'm 5'11". That's not a good ratio at my build. You know, some guys can carry it. Wasn't for me. So I came into that spring the end of that spring, knowing that I had a lot of work to do physically in order to even be taken seriously, came when fall camp came around. And so I came into the season, Austin Collins with dinged his shoulder, you know, so that kind of pushes you up a little bit. And the first couple of games, you know, I got to play against Navy because it's, you know, it's a different kind of defense. So I got to start that game. That was really cool. I gained a lot of trust during camp and, you know, studied my butt off to make sure that I could contribute should the time come. I was hoping to get on the field. My goal was to get in like sub packages, potentially in play special teams, my redshirt freshman year. And then, you know, Jamoris went down against Michigan State. I think that was like week three or week four. The week before he had got dinged in the second half. So I played against Purdue. So I'd gotten some reps and, you know, leaned on a lot of the other experienced guys that were back there. Zeke Mata was a huge helped me. And I really have to give a ton of credit to Bob Elliott, rest in peace. Just one of the greatest coaches I've ever had. Once I started playing, he would have me come up into his office every single day. Right after we get off the practice field, we'd be in there for 45 minutes to an hour. We'd go through the entire practice, go through corrections, so that when we went down to film, I'd be seeing it again. So he just invested so much time into me, which really accelerated my maturation process that season. And I gained confidence over the course of the year. Our defense was good. I mean, playing safety in front of all of, or I should say behind all of those guys made it a little simpler. You know, you had Dan Fox and Carlo and Manti and Tapp. You know, all these guys were just mammoths. Lewis Nix, also rest in peace. You know, just so many good players. And so playing safety, I'm sure they covered me a lot, you know. I thought I was balling out there. I was like, why do I always have cover two on my side? We don't want you one-on-one with that guy. But it was, that whole season was a dream. That was one of the most fun years of my life. I mean, totally unexpected going into the season to have a role like that and then get to contribute, play in a national championship. I think that's the dream.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of curious after that. I mean, you have this great season and you know, over your next 3 years, you were obviously still a big contributor, but you didn't necessarily always start. You know, you kind of took on different roles. You played nickel a little bit. What was it like to kind of go from that high to then start realizing you have to like kind of adapt and do different things and, you know, be that kind of team player, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't easy. I'm not going to sit here and say it was always the easiest thing. You know, I'd gone through position changes and coaching changes, all that kind of stuff. And I learned that also in that 2012 season, nothing's, you know, I looked at Jim Morris that whole year. We'd spend a lot of time together. He tore his Achilles and, you know, you think everything's going to be hunky-dory. So when you hit adversity, it's just, you know, leaning on other people's experience. And I never thought I was going to play football in college. To me, it was always kind of like means to an end. And so I, you know, when I did swallow my pride about things, I try to take the perspective of, okay, I'm still here. I still have an opportunity to contribute. I can still impact people's lives around me and I'm getting the best education out, you know? And so at the time I would say it sucked and it was miserable and, you know, all of those things. When I look back at my NFL career and all the things that I felt devalued for, fighting, clawing, trying to prove myself every year, that was my calling card in the NFL. You know, teams would bring me in, I'd contribute, and, you know, the next year I'd start at zero. And that was kind of like how my college career went. It didn't matter what the year prior ended up being, positive or negative. It was, you know, you're starting at the bottom of the hill and you got to climb it again.
What did it mean kind of going through that? And in 2015, you were named a captain. I rewatched that video before that where Coach Kelly like is on the field, kind of tells you that. I don't know if you knew beforehand that he was going to announce that. But like, what did that moment mean to you and kind of given what you had gone through?
It meant the world to me. You know, I broke down. There's a video of me just sitting in the meeting room crying because I, you know, my career didn't go how I wanted it to go. You know, I think to start, especially to have started, you know, early in my career, I joke around and say it was like the Benjamin Button career of football. You know, you play a lot early and play special teams as a fifth year. But I was very proud because the team votes on it, right? It's your peers that vote on it. And even though my contribution or impact on the field hadn't been the same since that year, the guys that I went to battle with every day, the guys I lived life with, you know, they all looked at me as a leader and thought that I could add a lot in that capacity. So to have gone, you know, backsliding as it would look on paper and still get elected was a huge honor and, you know, one of the bigger ones of my life.
And my colleague Tim O'Malley wanted me to ask you about when you had to go into your press conference after, I don't know how immediately you had to speak to the media after finding out that news, but it sounds like you had an emotional reaction had called your brother and then had to like come talk to the media. And it sounds like your reaction was like, well, I just talked to my brother and now I'm here dealing with you guys or something like that.
But
what was that moment like having to like be in front of the media, people like myself, when you're kind of going through all that?
It was emotional for me because I probably would not have played football if it wasn't for Nathan. And then to go to, you know, Notre Dame, whether I rode the bench the whole time, it would have still been like, I can't believe I got a full scholarship to this insanely prestigious school with the best people in the world, the most passionate fans in the world, and got an education. You know, there's that would have been the dream right there. And then to, you know, fast forward, this is years and years later, so many highs and lows, and man, I don't know about this, you know, at different points, to be in that moment and then get to talk to him first. He's the first person I've told, like, right after practice. And they were like, you know, you got to go in and meet him. All of those memories were just, like, rushing through my head. And I was just like, I get emotional even now talking about it. I haven't thought about that moment in so long. But it was so impactful because it was just, you know, this full circle moment. And then, you know, right away, they're like, so how does it feel? Like, I'm, you know. But I always kind of hung my hat on just being real. So I, like, broke down. I was like, well, I'm not going to, like, walk out. This is how I'm feeling. And, you know, I don't think crying is necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
Yeah.
I think that's a good example for kids to see, too.
Yeah, it's just real. I was, yeah.
So before we kind of get into your, you know, professional journey, I do want to touch on, you know, played on some really significant teams. You know, we touched on the 2012 team, 2015, I think. Still, in terms of modern Notre Dame football, is often looked at the gold standard just in terms of, like, the talent and number of first rounders on the field. I'm kind of curious, looking back on it, if you could pick, you can go beyond one player for each side of the ball, but if you could just kind of go, who are some of, like, the most talented or best players you feel like you played with at Notre Dame?
I played with Michael Floyd my freshman year, and he was unstoppable. I played with Tyler Eifert for a couple of years, unstoppable. I mean, there's Ben Koyak, you know. Ben Koyak in college was, he'd always just kind of, like, walk around. Then he goes and, you know, he's balling the league for years and years. And you're like, Clint, you hated football. Like, how are you? You're so nasty at it. Gosh, TJ Jones, Theo Riddick. And the entire offensive line while I was there, you could say, you know, the Martin brothers, Ronnie Stanley, Q. I mean, unreal, Stephon Tuitt. I mean, you could literally name just about everybody for the most part. Will Fuller, CJ Procise. I mean, there's Torrey Hunter. You know, Torrey came in on a broken leg, but just his ability to just move and create space, second to none. Kavari Russell was very fun to have on your side because they didn't really throw it that way. And if they did, it'd be high and you'd have a chance at it. You know, there's just Harrison Smith. I mean, he's still playing.
Yeah.
And he's still one of the best. Like, we played Boston College and he had the flu my freshman year. And I saw him make, like, three plays in a row. He was in the post and broke up a seven route. And I was like, how are you doing this? Like, I know you don't feel good. Zeke the Freak, Zeke Mata, he was unreal. There's just something. Jalen Smith. I'm sure I'm leaving people out too, but there were just so many. Troy Nicholas, so many good players. Every day in practice, you're going against somebody who's probably going to go, if not that year, the next year, the year after, and be playing on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I should have looked up the number of first rounders you played with day two picks. It's probably
it's
should have
crazy.
Done the research, but yeah.
Unreal.
Definitely. Incredible era. So after that, I don't think you got a, you played throughout your final year. I think you actually had in your 4 years on defense, your least number of tackles, but I don't think you got a combine invite, but you're still going through the draft process. Like,
yeah,
only been playing football for 6 or 7 years. Like, what was it like to be like, I didn't even know I was going to play football in college, but now I'm going to go pursue the NFL and kind of go through that process?
Well, it wasn't, it was kind of, when I started the whole journey at Notre Dame, I was like, okay, it's me soon, I'm going to get a great education. And I was just looking at the guys I played with, the teams I played on, all that stuff as my career was ending. And, you know, I also had the mindset like, okay, special teams, that's how you actually make it in the NFL early, at least, you know, if you're drafted, if you're not drafted, unless you're like the quarterback, you know, or the star wide receiver, you're probably not going to play special teams. Everyone else is playing some special team in some capacity. And I'd kind of seen the blueprint of that. Sergio Brown, you know, made a great career of that in Indianapolis and New England and in Jacksonville. And I had watched his career and he, you know, made it on special teams. So there was a roadmap to kind of follow in that regard. I had several people tell me, like, really, you're not just going to go get a job? Like, why would you? I was walking in to pack up my locker and Van Gorder was in there. And He's like, so what are your plans now? And I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to go to Chicago and train and, you know, try to go to the NFL. And he's like, really? And the way he said really was like, you? You know, and I was like, that's great. You know, see you later. I have a picture of Mike keeping my backpack and took it to every game I went in the NFL. It's funny. So I went to Chicago, trained, and I, you know, obviously knew I wasn't going to get to the combine invite, but our pro day, we had so many people. Mike McGlinchey, you know, there's so many people that every scout was going to come to see, and Jalen and Kabari and Will Fuller, they were all Nick Martin. So you had so many people there to watch. I knew if I just had a good showing, then, you know, maybe I could get signed somewhere. And I knew if I could get in a building, I could have a chance.
Yeah. And I mean, I looked at your pro day numbers. I think you ran like a 4.5 flat in the 40. Like, those are pretty good times. So obviously that helps you get into, I believe the Arizona Cardinals signed you as an undrafted free agent. I looked back at some reports and it sounds like you're playing really well throughout even like the preseason process and were like a late cut and then got picked up the next day by the Colts and then played in game one with the Colts. Like, what was that like going, you know, you kind of grind real hard, you feel like you're doing well, get cut, and then you're on another team and you're playing. Like, what was that like to go through that?
It was a whirlwind. I mean, it all happened so fast towards the end, but I went to Arizona knowing that I probably wouldn't make the team just based on the safeties that they had on the roster already. They had Tyrann Mathieu, DJ Swearinger, Tony Jefferson, Tyvon Branch, and they had drafted a kid, Marquis Christian, the same year I was. So I just knew that, like, their safety room is so stacked, but because they're so stacked, if I could hang and I could learn from those guys who were already having great careers at that point, then I would have a chance to play on another team, because very few other safety rooms looked like that at that time with that much depth. And so I went there trying to learn as much as I could from them. I still was kind of surprised I got cut, because I was like, dude, I'm balling. I'm out here balling. Y'all thought I was slow. Y'all thought I, you know, all this stuff. I was out there smacking people. And then Marquis Christian, he was a thumper. So we had so much fun playing because we played a ton. Because you had the other side of that is because they had so much depth and, you know, a veteran presence in that room, I also knew that I'd probably get to play a lot of the preseason, because you're not going to put, like, all four of those guys are starters on every team in the NFL, and you have them all sitting there. So, like, they're going to rest them and, you know, you get a lot more reps. And so when I got cut, I thought I was going to make the team because they released it so late, like you said. So I was like, oh, man, I might have a chance. And then, you know, my agent calls me. He's like, hey, you got cut. I was like, sick. He's like, so start packing. I don't know where you're going. So I'm in my friend's apartment packing up all my stuff. Like, okay, I could be done. I could be going somewhere else. Or I could be, like, you know, tapping in that Notre Dame network, like, I need a job, right? And then I got the call from Indy at, like, 3 o'clock, and I was on a flight at, like, 7:30 to Indianapolis. Picked up, dropped off at practice the next day. Know nobody. You know, I'm calling people by their numbers in the building. And then that first week we played the Lions, and, you know, a couple guys went down, and they told me when I got there, Grigson and Pagano, they were like, you need to know everything, which was kind of my deal in college. Like, I had to kind of know both safety spots, spot corner, and then nickel or outside linebacker or whatever. So I just went in and started studying, and then a couple guys go down, they just throw me in the game, and I'm standing out there like, I don't even know the other safety's name, you know, but I can't even sit here and be like, hey, you know, Mike, you know, it was a whirlwind, but I think I gained trust in that, you know, and they told me that's why I was there. Like, you're going to, you know, you're going to have to play at some point. So you need to know what you're doing. And I think, you know, they probably called a defense that I would know at the end of the game, but that kind of set the groundwork. And then from there in India, you know, continued to gain trust, gain favor, and got more playing time.
Yeah, I think you started almost every game the following season. Still a big contributor the next year when I believe you guys went like 10-6 and made the playoffs. Like, kind of curious, like, going into that situation, how much, you kind of touched on this earlier, but how much your time at Notre Dame kind of prepared you for that, the NFL, where things didn't always go your way. You weren't necessarily like the Jalen Smith out there, just kind of being physically better than everybody. Like, what was it like to do that?
Well, I knew that like my advantage would be if I, it's not just my advantage. I think it's anybody's advantage in any profession. If you're prepared and you actually know what to do, even if you're like a little slower or a little shorter, you know, a little shorter arms, or, you know, his hands aren't as big, so he's not good at football, whatever they say, you know. I just knew that if I knew what I was supposed to do and knew where to be all the time, then that would trump ability, trust Trump's ability if, you know, you're next on the line to get fired, if somebody blows the coverage or whatever the case may be. And then I was surrounded by people at Notre Dame constantly that were going to the NFL and making immediate impacts. I'm like, I was going against him in practice last year, you know? So I think just being around that caliber of player definitely helps the transition to go to the next level, because you're going against a former first rounder, or you're on the, across the ball from one, or line next to one every day at practice.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that makes a lot of sense. That just, I mean, we touched on earlier, just the caliber of players you were seeing constantly, and I guess knowing what you needed to do to, you know, kind of always keep up with those players makes a lot of sense. After that, you went to the Jets, and we talked a little bit before recording this. I believe it was in 2019, your first season there. Bennett Jackson was also on the roster. He'd been dealing with a lot of injuries, so he'd made a lot of, you know, camps and stuff like that, but had just kind of always come up short. And I was with Blue and Gold Illustrated at the time, and I got to interview you both for a story on kind of him being on the roster. So I was more focused on him, but I'm kind of curious, what was it like your first season in New York playing with one of your good friends and kind of getting to see him kind of start living his dream after going through so much adversity?
Yeah, I have the utmost respect for Bennett. He and I are super close. I remember when I signed, you know, I got released like the before the last preseason game in Indy. Shout out to Rex Hogan, another Notre Dame guy. He was the assistant GM in New York, and he had been with the Colts prior to that. So he brought me in, and then, you know, he calls me the next day. He's like, we're signing Bennett. And, you know, I'd followed Bennett's career. He and I have always been very, very close. And I was like, we're signing him, not like, hey, he's going to be on peace squad or something. He's like, no, we're signing him. You two are the backup safety. So I remember thinking, like, this is a dream, you know, to have to, you know, I loved Indy. I would have stayed there forever. But like, to leave teams, go somewhere where you already have an ally in the building, and then they sign your best friend your whole time in college and post, like, this is a dream. So he shows up and, you know, like you said, he battled. I mean, he grinded. He was in and out and coming back from stuff. Tough breaks at different points when he was playing really, really good football. And we just had a blast that year. And despite the record and all that stuff, you know, we lived in the same apartment building. And, you know, it was like, it just made the whole transition of leaving Indy after being very familiar to there. He's from New Jersey also, from Hazlitt. And, you know, he got to play for his hometown. I got to watch him do that while, you know, he had been with the Giants his rookie year, then Baltimore, and full circle, he's back and, you know, in his backyard. So like after games, we'd hang out with his whole family and stuff. It felt like, you know, it felt like being in college again, honestly, minus the record.
That's great. And then the next season, you're, you know, back with the Jets, you're named the special teams captain. What was it like for you to, you know, you're kind of, you had a moment where people are saying like, oh, you're really even going to try this NFL thing? And then you're 5 years later, you're still playing and you're a captain on, I mean, one of the more prominent franchises in the league.
Yeah, it was, again, it's a huge honor because the team votes on it, right? It's not like the coaches come down like, hey, we want this guy because he's, you know, the quarterback or whatever it is. Your peers elect you. And so it was a huge honor, not something I was expecting. And I don't think it was something really anybody outside the building was maybe expecting, because I got cut the day before because they had to bring guys back off IR. And so, you know, I was already a vested veteran. So like if they could cut me, I wouldn't go on waivers and like, hey, we're going to resign you tomorrow. But, you know, so I get cut, you know, I'm packing, like, just leave your stuff. But I'm like turning my iPad. Guys like, dang, Farley, like what the heck's happening? I was like, you know, hope to see you soon or something. I knew I was going to come back the next day. And then, My wife was with me in the car, and she's like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean you just got cut? And I was like, it's okay. This is just how this works. And then, you know, go fast forward the next day, the team votes on captains, they elect me. And I was like, dang, this is actually a wild story. And again, just a huge honor. And pouring into the guys in the locker room and trying to have an impact that wasn't just, you know, a special teams tackle or interception or whatever it might be.
So you go through that a little bit. So they release you, but they know you're going to come back. So when the team votes, were you back on the team already, or did they vote you knowing like you would get re-signed? Like when?
So we voted the next day.
Okay.
So I got cut and everyone was like, where is he? And I came back the next morning and we voted. And then they're like, all right, here's your captains. And I was like, what is going on? Because you also have new guys in the building too, because, you know, it's the end of camp. So like there's a lot of shuffling of rosters. So people are like, didn't that dude just get cut? Yeah, like 2 days ago. It might have been 2 days, but yeah, it was just, you know, I'm very grateful that they, you know, did what they said they were going to do. Whether I got elected captain or not, they were like, hey, we're going to release you, but we're going to bring you back. Because we got to bring these, you know, first round picks off IR.
Yeah. Well, clearly they made the right decision, because that probably would have been pretty demoralizing had they not gone on their word.
Oh, yeah.
Had their about to name captain. So,
yeah. No, it was awesome. It was a big honor. Definitely a big honor. I have, you know, the jerseys with the C on them, which, you know, I think everybody looks at when you're looking at a field and like, dang, that dude's the captain. I never thought in a million years I would be a captain at Notre Dame or in the NFL.
Yeah. And I think in the NFL, some teams have started to name more captains. Like it's not just like three or four guys, but I mean, at that time, I think you're just one of a few captains. Like it's not, I guess in college, sometimes you can see teams like name 10 guys and
the whole senior class. You're like, dude, who's talking out here?
Yeah. But that, yeah, you were one of the few guys on the, you know, 53-man roster to get it. So,
yeah, no, it was a big honor. It was a strange year, though, because we had, you know, no fans in the stadiums.
Oh, right.
So I was like, you know, I have a picture in my house. It's me and Larry Fitzgerald, which is a crazy moment because he was in Arizona and I was there. He's like, you're going to be good, Farley. You're going to be good, Farley. You're going to be good, Farley. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And then, you know, we're standing there 5 years later. He dapped me up. We did the coin toss. He said, I told you. It's like the first thing he said. I was like, dang it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Now his son's about to go to Notre Dame too.
I know. It's wild. It probably was that moment. He's like, these Notre Dame guys are all right.
Well, the current coaching staff should probably call you and thank you if they haven't already then.
Yeah, no. That's all his talent. It has nothing to do.
Definitely. So then over the next few years, you kind of, you know, bounce around a little bit. You're the Titans, Raiders, and then in your career with the Panthers, you know, kind of going to your hometown team. What was it kind of like to kind of go through those last few years where you weren't as stable of a situation, I guess? And when did you know it was kind of time to like hang up the cleats and start plotting your next move, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, being undrafted every year is kind of like I said earlier, just you're starting from zero. They're going to bring in new guys. You know, even going into my second year in Indianapolis, I'm sitting there watching the draft and like, you know, with the 15th overall pick, Malik Hooker. And I'm like, dang, dude. Like, this dude, what? So you just like learn as an undrafted guy, you're always going to have to fight to make a roster, whether you're under contract the next year for the team or not. And so I also knew I was getting older. Like when I went to Tennessee, I think I was like 29. And I was the second oldest guy in the room, in our DB room. So you just realize really quick, you know, how fast time goes. And, you know, I was super grateful to play for the Titans. That was a super fun year. The Raiders was an awesome year. I got to reconnect with my special teams coordinator, Tom McMahon, that I had my first 2 years in Indy. And I think you just try to like hold on for as long as possible. You know, if an opportunity presents itself, it might not be in the same place you were last year, but a job's a job, right? And then fast forward to my last year in 2023, I signed with the Panthers week 3. Frank Reich was there. He was the coach my last year in Indy. I actually grew up with his kids. We went to the same church growing up, which is kind of wild. His family was here in Charlotte. So they brought me in. I was up and down on practice squad, played 5 games on the active roster. And it was just a big full circle moment, but also this, you know, realization, you know, I'm kind of doing what I did in college. Like I'm in my 8th year in the NFL and I'm on practice squad. And, you know, it's kind of a rerun of what college was like in a way. So I stayed in shape until like week 8 last year. And then I was just at peace with the whole thing. I was like, you know what? I never dreamed about playing a snap of football past high school, really. And I played, you know, at the best school to play football at in the world. I played 8 years in the NFL and, you know, I got to retire in my hometown. I got to wear 41, which I wore my whole career for my high school football coach. And he retired in Carolina. That's why his family's here. So I got to give him the jersey of, you know, my first game here wearing his number. It was just an awesome way to close it up. My son was at the games that I played in, you know, which was always a dream of mine and old enough to remember. So it was the writing was on the wall. And I'm glad it was the story ended here with that part of my life.
Well, I'm sure it was, I don't know how much your family is still in the Charlotte area, but I, you know, was looking at back at some old quotes from you when you were at Notre Dame, and I think you talked about you have 6 brothers and sisters, come from like a big family of 9. So I'm wondering if that was also important to maybe be around some of those people. And then I also want to ask part the quote, you brought it up because you talked about how important communication was in such a big family and how you learned that. So in addition to like some of the lessons you learned from Notre Dame, I'm kind of curious how dealing with such a big family, and I'm sure a lot of different personalities, do you feel like that helped you in NFL locker rooms and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely probably helped. You know, 4 brothers, 2 sisters. Like you said, everybody's incredibly different. And learning how to navigate the waters with, you know, 6 other people every single day, plus your parents, and they have different relationships with different siblings. And, you know, that whole deal, I think, just rounded me out pretty well as dealing with different personality types for sure. Cause my siblings are all wild. Well, they're wild, but they're all wildly different. And then, you know, my parents still live in Charlotte. I have a couple siblings still here. My wife's family's in Charlotte. Her parents live like 2 minutes from us, and my parents have like 8 minutes from us. So we had our son in 2022, and you know, we had bought a house here in Charlotte, knowing that this is where we're going to be, especially with a family, you know, get the village, pack it in. And we had gone to Vegas like right after he was born, came back here, ended up staying here, and it's been awesome just being close to family. Because once I left high school, man, I left at 19 and didn't come back till I was almost 30.
Yeah, dang. No, that's cool. So
it's a big, it's just a big support system to have, you know, around you, especially to be around parents. They get to, you know our son, he gets to know them, and that's a super special relationship.
Definitely. And I definitely want to kind of transition to what you're doing now. But before I do that, I mean, it's kind of a random question, but kind of wondering if you have like, what's maybe the coolest opportunity football has kind of afforded you that's like outside the game? For instance, like I know you did ballet on a show with Johnny Bananas from MTV's The Challenge fame.
Yeah,
he had a show on NBC. I believe you played one season with Pat McAfee. So I'm kind of curious,
yeah,
what are some maybe off the field things that you got to do that really stand out to you now?
Man, you just find yourself in so many different rooms. I think that's something that being backed by the NFL, being backed by Notre Dame, you just find yourself in some wild rooms that you might never have envisioned yourself being in. And, you know, gosh, there's so, I'd honestly say the most impactful part of, you know, outside of the game to me was always when I would volunteer in whatever community I was in. Because you get to see how people are actually living and the things that they're going through. And because you're wearing an NFL, you know, baggy jersey, I don't think I was special in it, but just the impact you can have because you're in it on somebody's life, that was always a super humbling, empowering feeling at the same time. Because you had a platform and you could actually use it to impact somebody's life whose life isn't going how they envisioned it. And then I've just met crazy people. I mean, I'm big into golf now, and you know, that's opened a lot of doors to meet, you know, presidents of massive companies and CEOs of massive companies and musicians and, you know, other athletes, just because you're backed by, you know, such a massive loved enterprise.
No, it makes sense. And so you mentioned kind of wisely setting up your home base in Charlotte. I believe I listened to an interview you did with ABC 57 last year, where you, I believe we're getting into wealth management at the time. Is that still kind of what your path is, or what are you kind of up to now as you kind of transitioned away from football?
Yeah, so I thought that was going to be my path. It's not currently. I was in a big rush to figure out, like, I need to do something. And I was praying a lot about it. I was like, I just need to be still. My son's young and I have time to really enjoy him before he starts going to school. So I've done some real estate stuff in and around Charlotte, single family investments, a couple multifamily unit investments. Really enjoy real estate, planning to get into land development at some point. Charlotte's expanding all over. Started a media company to house a golf podcast that'll come out this fall called Just About Golf. So I've been putting a lot of time into that this year. I've done some public speaking for different companies throughout the course of the year. So I'm just kind of dabbling in a lot of things, trying to be mindful of the time I have. And then, you know, this golf podcast is something that I've wanted to do for forever. It's all about just the connection that the environment of golf creates, and the storytelling that comes from that, and interviewing cool people at the top of the profession, learning their stories, and hearing it from their perspectives has been really, really fun to do. That'll start coming out this fall. So yeah, I'm kind of all in on Just About Golf right now. I'm actually outfitting a room in our house. We're moving the podcast studio here so we can just churn them out. So I'm really excited about that. And, you know, hopefully it booms.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm also in the process of, I mean, right now we have one photo in our office for the podcasting, but I get it. It takes some time to figure out how you want to get that set up.
We started really big. We had like all these camera guys and all this stuff. We went out and filmed a whole, you know, several rounds of golf and sit down after. And also I'm like, we just need to simplify this thing. So it's gone through a threshing, but I think we have in the right spot to gain a lot of traction.
So, I mean, you mentioned you're a big fan of golf, but it sounds like it's something that has become a passion. How long have you played? Like, when did you start getting into this work?
So I got into it actually at Notre Dame because the Burke on campus. Okay. And in the summer, there's nothing to do. And all the guys would go out there and just hack it around, you know, after workouts. It stays light so long. And then on weekends, I would play. And I really got into it after my rookie year. And I found throughout my career, the people and teammates that I was the closest to and have remained the closest to are all the guys I played golf with, because I learned so much about them. And you learn so much more about a person outside the environment you know them in. You can't sit next to somebody for 4 hours or walk next to them and learn nothing, or you wouldn't be invited to play golf. And as I transitioned out of football, I really realized that, you know, a lot of guys struggle with the transition, which I'm not going to say I didn't or haven't. And a lot of it's the locker room. It's the camaraderie. It's the competition. It's just like having people that are experiencing the same thing you're experiencing, and then you're completely removed from it. And I really feel like I found that since retiring, especially in golf, because I have groups that I play with and, you know, set tee times and whatever it may be. But that community, you know, it's not the same as the NFL. And I'm not even trying to make that direct comparison, but I found an outlet that also adds that kind of locker room-ish feel. You're just with your boys on grass, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Who, off the top of your head, who are maybe some of the best teammates from Notre Dame you had, or I guess they could be later players, but Notre Dame football players that are like, who's the best golfer you played with, or who's up there?
The best golfer, Harrison. I haven't played with him. Harrison Smith's really good. I know he's really good. Michael Floyd sucks. I hope he listens to this. He actually doesn't suck. He's really good. Man, I'm sure more of the quarterbacks than I think are good at golf or specialists. But I would say, I mean, Floyd's super into it. Harrison plays a lot. I think Kyle Rudolph plays a lot. Braxton Cave plays. I don't know how good that. Bennett Jackson's actually starting to play golf. I sold him a set of irons like a year ago, and he just talks trash all the time about how he's going to beat me. I'm like, dude, you can't break 100. There's no way.
I also struggle to break 100, but all I have is trash talk. So I get where
it's going. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. you got to bring what you got, you know?
Yeah.
But Darius Fleming, he and I play a lot together. Steve Botsford, he and I play a lot together. When I'm in Chicago, Cap plays golf. We have this golf group chat, Dion Walker. Everybody goes, we all go on a golf trip every year. So it's just an easy way to stay connected. And, you know, if nothing else, you'll show up for the golf and you'll have to hang out. So,
yeah. Awesome. And kind of speaking of Notre Dame, obviously they had a pretty good season last year, but it's under, you know, I guess Mike Denbrock is still there, but there, you know, a lot of new faces and coaches and stuff. What's it been like for you as an alum, especially maybe now that you're, you know, away from the game, to reconnect maybe as somewhat of a fan with the Notre Dame football program?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, Marcus Freeman's the guy, right? You don't see very many coaches, period, like him, in my opinion, in a lot of ways. But, you know, if you hear anybody talk about him, everybody talks about him the same. And I think that's a testament to his character. And then his leadership, you know, under his leadership, he's bringing in the right people. College football is always going to move and shift, and there'll be different coaches and different players. But if you have the right guy steering the ship, you know, I think you always have a chance to go in the right direction. Ash, the DC, Chris Ash, he was actually my position coach when I was in Vegas and one of my favorite coaches I've ever had. And I would always go back and forth because he'd be like, oh, you Notre Dame guys. And, you know, right when he got the job, I called him. I was like, hey, man, you're a Notre Dame guy now. And we actually ran into each other earlier this year on campus. And that was a cool moment. But he's a great coach. Super, super insightful, bright defensive mind. Been around the game for forever. So I think the people are in the right places. And there's a total buy-in. You know, and I think you can feel that. You can sense that. You can tell every game last year, you know, just how hard guys played for each other, for Freeman, for Notre Dame. I mean, I think that's the culture there is right. And I think, you know, morale is one of the biggest issues in all team sports. And when you have a strong morale and a strong culture and then add a ton of talent into that, and a lot of guys who have seen what it looks like, right? Like go through the entire year last year, every game's a playoff game. The young players, so many young players, especially on defense, stepped up and they've been in those moments. And so then all those moments aren't foreign, you know? And so I'm excited about this year.
What do you feel like, you know, having worked with Chris Ash, you touched on him a little bit, but what do you feel like he'll bring? I mean, I feel like when the media get to talk with him, he's kind of like, I'm not changing much. And he's a little coy, but in your experience, like, what is he kind of add as a defensive coordinator potentially?
I mean, first and foremost, he's such a great defensive mind. You know, he's been around the game, like I said, for so long. And the thing I loved and still love about Coach Ash is how much he cared about the players, right? I think that gets lost sometimes, especially the higher and higher up you get. You know, it's the job, your coworkers more than anything. But Coach Ash would come in there and, you know, make sure everybody was good. He'd always be checking in on people. And I said, so when you have somebody like that, he's fiery too now. It's not like he's coming over and like, hey, are you feeling good about practice today? You know, he'll light you up if you need to get lit up. But he just has a very high emotional intelligence. And I think, you know, he's going to make great decisions, but also like guys will play hard for him because he actually cares about you as a person, not, you know, what your stat line is.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm kind of curious, like, what are you like as now you're a fan, you don't have, you know, your own games to focus on? Like, are you an anxious fan? How involved and much do you kind of pay attention and kind of get into that aspect of it?
Well, I was always very locked in, even while playing, you know, Saturdays at the hotel, I'd be like, we're watching the Notre Dame game, or I'd go to my room, you know. It's more stressful now, I think, probably, than it ever has been. Like you said, not playing myself. And I played on so many different teams. You know, I'll cheer for my friends on different teams, but it's, you know, it's not like I'm a fan of seven teams, but I'm diehard Notre Dame. So I would say I'm more stressed watching games now than I ever was playing games. Because there's an element of, you know, you have no control over it, obviously, and you want to see the team win and succeed and go far. But it's definitely the quintessential Notre Dame house on Saturdays. At the Farley House all fall. you know, my son will dig. Dad, he thinks that football is called a Go Irish, you know, so we're getting him dialed in. My wife knows if it's, you know, we're down and it's late and it's stressful. Just don't say anything. I'll just sit there and delude. So it's been really fun to be on this side of the game and really getting to enjoy it as a fan and, you know, live and die by whatever happens on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. And two of the current players, Bryce Young and Mike Gilbert, went to your high school, Charlotte Christian. And Notre Dame's also putting a lot more effort on the recruiting trail. They have, I think, four players committed in the 2026 class from their hometown, including Ronnie Dunham, who's a five-star defensive end. What's it like to, I don't know if you have a relationship with Young or Gilbert, but also just to see how much effort Notre Dame is kind of putting into the area where you're from right now?
I think it's really special. I'm not going to sit here and say I know Bryce and Mike is super well. I talked to Mike after a game for a long time. Earlier this year, him and his parents, and we had a great conversation. And then Bryce and I actually trained. I got cut in 2023 for like 2 weeks with the Panthers, then re-signed. And I was working out at this gym in Charlotte, Velocity, and they were on like winter break or something. And so I was in there working out with Bryce. And, you know, he and I would talk. And I mean, he's a freak. You watch the games and the impact he had as a true freshman, you're like, good gracious. You know, and I was working out and I was like, you weren't that big, you know, you definitely were not that big. But it just shows the wide net that Notre Dame casts. You know, you can recruit nationally and guys will come. They'll come from all over the place. And I think that's, you know, a testament to their ability to find and discover talent. I think it's really great for Charlotte and North Carolina as a whole that a lot of talent is getting found here.
Definitely. And yeah, I mean, Bryce is even bigger now. I think he's up to like 273. And
it's crazy. Yeah. He was like wiry. I was like, are you playing receiver in Notre Dame? You know, then I, you know, turn on the tape and I'm like, this dude is, he's got that motor and so long.
Yeah. And I think he's similar to you where his dad wouldn't let him play until he got to high school. And I think they tried him at receiver in some different spots. And then eventually, like, why don't you just play where,
yeah,
where your hand did?
Yeah. Yeah, put your hand in the dirt. This guy can teach you something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super excited for both. And Mike, you know, I watched several games because I was in Carolina their senior year. And so I live 5 minutes from my high school. And so I'd go up there and watch both of them play. And I'd be like, dang, these dudes are legit already. And they're not even there yet with all the strength and conditioning and the caliber of people you're going against every day, they're going to fit right in.
I wasn't covering Notre Dame back when you were playing, but I feel like what I've known about you is you've always had a relationship where you've done a really good job of connecting with the fans. And I'm kind of curious, like, how important was it to you to foster that, and what does it mean to you? Like, I think I've seen even on social media, people have named their dogs Farley after you and stuff like that. Like, to know that, like, even if you weren't maybe always the star player, like you had such like an impact on players or people and people who follow the team.
Yeah, I mean, I just try to be myself and like my authentic self and not let, you know, my job or my, you know, season or whatever team I was on define that. And I, you know, I have this distinct memory in like second grade. We had a Panthers player, Jordan Gross, who's an offensive lineman, came and he like read to our class and he high-fived me and told me I was fast. And I remember like walking around for weeks like, that guy plays in the NFL and he thought I was fast. And so I always took that with me. Just the impact you can have on somebody, because I think so much of an athlete's life is viewed through a screen, whether it be a TV screen or what they choose to put out. And so you know, think it could be one way or the other. So to just, you know, be real and normal and approachable and try to engage instead of be engaged with, and be offensive, not offensive, but, you know, yeah, take an offensive approach to, you know, seeing somebody saying something, because you do have a platform, and, you know, that one interaction could be super impactful. Just like that second grade high five I got was, you know, as clear as day in my mind, even now, like, dang, that guy, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know where he came from or anything else. He was just wearing a Panthers jersey. And I was like, well, now I have the opportunity to do that and, you know, have fun with it at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. And last thing I want to ask you about is something I had Sean Crawford on my the first episode of the show. And I brought up, I feel like Notre Dame gets a lot of credit as like tight end U or offensive line U. But I actually think if you, especially if you look at the players now, safety is probably a position they could be in that discussion with. You talked about Harrison Smith. Obviously, there's Kyle Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Julian Love has moved there. Loie Gilman's carved out a good career. Xavier Watts just got drafted. I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are.
Adon Schuller's going. Adon Schuller, he's definitely going.
Yeah, I just got named a captain.
Yeah, he's going.
Yeah, so I'm kind of curious as somebody who played the position, what you think about that take, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could definitely make the argument. You know, it's such a cerebral position. And I think, you know, going back to what we've talked about kind of the whole time of just the caliber of people you're going against and the type of defense you're learning and the speed in which you're going in practice all the time. I think as a safety, that slows things down if you're going against, you know, a Will Fuller every single day. You're like, okay, not everybody runs like this. Like, not everybody in the NFL runs like this. Or, you know, you got Troy Nicholas, who's 6'6", 270, running a 4.5. You're like, not everybody's doing, you know? And so you kind of get comfortable being back there. And I think Notre Dame does a great job of recruiting safeties. And I think anytime you have success, you know, I think I look at Harrison Smith and I look at him as the guy who paved the way, right? He went on first round pick and lives up to it. And then you got several other, you got Kyle Hamill, the same thing. And so it's like this blueprint. Like, you can go here, and if you do what you're capable of doing, like, you're gonna have an opportunity to be an early pick playing safety coming out of Notre Dame.
Yeah, definitely. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for making time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, Drew. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. And everyone listening, thank you for tuning in once again, and we'll be back in another 2 weeks with another episode. Have a great day.